So the Lord blesses your Dhamma Brahman. So Shukadev Goswami said, Lord Hari Krishna perfectly knows the hearts of all living beings, and he is especially devoted to the Brahmanas. While the Supreme Lord, the goal of all saintly persons, conversed in this way with the best of the twice born, he laughed and spoke the following words to his dear friend of his, the Brahmana Sudama, all the while smiling and looking upon him with affection. So a commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. In this chapter, Krishna takes food from Sudamana and without Sudama's knowledge, rewards him with unlimited treasure to repay his debt to him. The words sarva bhuta mano abhigya indicate that since Krishna knows the minds of everyone, he immediately knew that his friend Sudama had brought some flat rice for him and was ashamed to present it. Krishna smiled at this moment, thinking, yes, I'm going to make you show what you brought for me. Krishna smiled and turned to laughter, and as he thought, how long are you going to keep this precious gift hidden under your cloth? Krishna looked at the bundle hidden under Sudama's garment. Then, with his loving glance, Krishna conveyed, the veins showing through your emaciated skin. Remember the word emaciated? It means very, very thin. And you can actually see the veins. And your ragged clothes astonish everyone in Dwarka. However, these symptoms of poverty will last only until tomorrow morning. So he was sort of predicting. Although Bhagavan Sri Krishna is the supreme independent Lord, he happily reciprocates with those who are Priyam's cherished servants. Being devoted to the Brahmanas, Brahmanya, Krishna especially enjoys favoring them because they possess unconditional devotional service to him. The supreme Lord said, O Brahmana, what gift have you brought me from home? I regard as great even the smallest gift offered by my devotees in pure love. But even great offerings presented by non-devotees do not please me. So, commentary. Krishna asked, have you brought anything for me? I surmise that you, having such affection for me, would not come empty-handed so far from your house to see me, who have such affection for you. Sudama replied, I am very embarrassed to show it because it is meager. Krishna responded, even if my devotee offers only a little with pure love, it becomes plenty for me. And then there's a recitation of the verse from the Bhagavad Gita. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. So in the commentary it says, Sudama said, when I took this from my house to present it to you, I did not think about it at all. But now I think it is unsuitable for you to eat. So I'm not giving it. The present verse, which Sri Krishna spoke in the Bhagavad Gita 9:26, is Krishna's reply to Sudama's anxiety that his bringing such an unfit offering was ill-considered. The phrases, bhakya prayachati bhakyupa vartam, may seem redundant since they both mean offered with devotion. The word bhakya can indicate how Krishna reciprocates the devotional mood of whoever offers him something with love. In other words, Krishna emphasizes here that its reciprocation of pure love is not dependent on the external quality of what is offered. Krishna said, something may or may not be tasty and pleasing in its own right. However, if my devotee offers it to me with love with the expectation that I will enjoy it, I eat it with great pleasure without thinking twice about it. The word, ashnami, I eat, implies that Krishna eats even a flower, which though acceptable, is not edible, bewildered as he is by the ecstatic love he feels for the devotee. Someone might question, Krishna, will you refuse an offering made to you by persons who are devotees of the demigods? Krishna answers, yes, I will refuse to eat it. I only eat from the hand of my devotee who has a pure heart and whose mind is fixed in devotion. I accept his offering and no one else's. So, next verse. Shukadeva Goswami continued, even after being addressed in this way, O king, the Brahmana felt too embarrassed to offer his palm fills of flat rice to the husband of the goddess of fortune. He simply kept his head bowed in shame. It's a commentary. Sudama refused to give his four handfuls of chip rice to Krishna due to embarrassment. The phrase, Pataye Shriyaha, husband of the goddess of fortune, indicates that Sudama was thinking, how can the lord of Shri eat this hard, tasteless flat rice? By bowing his head, Sudama revealed his meditation. O Lord, do not mock me. Though you have requested me many times, I've decided that I will not give it to you. On the other side, Krishna was thinking, but you are my devotee, so you should do as you decided to do when you left home and give it to me. And next text. Being the direct witness in the hearts of all living beings, Krishna fully understood why Sudama had come to see him. Thus he thought, in the past my friend has never worshipped me out of a desire for material opulence, but now he comes to me to satisfy his chaste and devoted wife. I will give him riches that even the immortal demigods cannot obtain. So commentary. Sri Krishna, the direct witness in the hearts of all living entities, or the seer of all souls, overwhelmed with love, momentarily wondered, though I know everything, how has my devotee become so poor? Then quickly understanding the situation, Krishna spoke to himself the words related in this verse. The result of performing bhakti without material desires is spiritual enjoyment. This point is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And there's a quote from the Bhagavatam. All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. Furthermore, according to the sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. There are two types of renounced devotees. One kind is inimical to sense gratification, and the other is indifferent to it. According to the different natures of these nishkam bhaktas, there are two kinds of results. The devotee who is extremely averse to worldly enjoyments will not get such enjoyments from Krishna. Jatabharat is an example of this type of renounced devotee. On the other hand, Krishna may give limitless wealth and power to a devotee who is neither repelled nor attracted by material things such as Prahlad Maharaj. I'd rather be that type of devotee. Up to this point in his life, Sudama Brahmana was totally averse to sense gratification. But now, out of compassion for his faithful wife, and also because he hankered to see his dear friend Krishna, he went to beg from the Lord. Then again, Krishna thought to himself, even the desire of Sudama's wife was motivated by loyalty to her husband. Thus, she is also without personal desire at all. Therefore, I will give them riches that even the immortal demigods cannot obtain. Next text. Thinking like this, the Lord snatched from the Brahmin's garments the grains of flat rice tied up in an old piece of cloth and exclaimed, what is this? Commentary. Krishna snatched the flat rice which Sudama had hidden in a strip of old cloth tied around his waist. Sometimes this pastime is depicted as like a wrestling match between Krishna and Sudama Brahmin. Because Krishna wants the flat rice and Sudama Brahmin is trying to hold it to himself. And Krishna's just like prying Sudama Brahmin's hands away from it, you know, just wrestling. They're actually wrestling on the bed. It's a very interesting pastime. I'm sure some of you have seen this when it's depicted in a drama. My friend, Krishna says, have you brought this for me? It gives me extreme pleasure. Indeed, a few grains of flat rice will satisfy not only me, but also the entire universe. Commentary. Krishna said, do not think this flat rice is unsuitable for me because it is stale and tasteless. I like it very much. Moreover, do not think it is not enough, for it will satisfy not only me, but the entire universe. Next text. After saying this, the Supreme Lord ate one palmful and was about to eat a second when the devoted goddess Rukmini held his hand. Commentary. By grabbing Krishna's hand, Rukmini implied, if you eat all this wonderful treat your friend brought from his house, what will remain for my friends, co-wives, sisters-in-law, servants, and myself? There will not be enough left to distribute even one grain to each of us. Even if I distribute one particle of rice to each person, it will not be sufficient. This was Rukmini's indication for Sudama. To her personal maidservants, Rukmini said by her gesture, this hard rice will upset my lord's tender stomach. In other words, there's two things that she made believe that to her personal maidservants that they should not allow Krishna to eat more rice because she was concerned with his stomach. But actually, she wanted to eat some of it herself. Next verse. Queen Rukmini said, this is more than enough, O soul of the universe, to secure him an abundance of all kinds of wealth in this world and the next. After all, one's prosperity depends simply on your satisfaction. Commentary. Through her eyes, Rukmini conveyed her intentions to Krishna. You have eaten enough, so be satisfied with that and do not eat any more, O soul of the universe. If you are satisfied, the whole universe is satisfied. Krishna spoke through his eyes. In order to give my dear friend great wealth, I must eat more than one handful. Rukmini replied, your satisfaction alone is the cause of one's increasing his wealth in this life and the next. Therefore, you need not chew much of this hard, tasteless rice. Rukmini's statement was communicated internally. It was not spoken externally, because if it were, then Sudama would understand her words and not speak verse 20. So verse 20 is ahead, it's 8 verses ahead of this. So next text. Sukadeva Goswami continued, the Brahmana spent that night in Lord Achyuta's palace. After eating and drinking to his full satisfaction, he felt as if he had gone to the spiritual world. Commentary. Eating and drinking sufficiently, Sudama felt as he had attained the heavenly planets. Next text. The next day, Sudama sent off for home while being honored by Lord Krishna, the self-satisfied maintainer of the universe. The Brahmana felt greatly delighted, my dear king, as he walked along the road. Commentary. The word Abhivanditaha, honored, means that Sri Krishna honored or respected Sudama by accompanying him on the road for a short distance. That's the proper etiquette when you have a guest. Krishna is perfectly complete in his own bliss, and he's the maintainer of the universe. Therefore, since Krishna can create the whole universe by his mere wish, what endeavor is it for him to create a luxurious palace for Sudama? Krishna abounds in bliss, so how difficult it is for him to fill the heart of Sudama with unlimited joy. Next text. Although he had apparently received no wealth from Lord Krishna, Sudama was too shy to beg for it on his own. He simply returned home, feeling very satisfied to have had the Supreme Lord's audience. Next text. Sudama thought, Lord Krishna is known to be devoted to the Brahmanas, and now I have personally seen this devotion. Indeed, he who carries the goddess of fortune on his chest has embraced this poorest beggar. Commentary. Sudama expresses his bliss in 4 verses. Sudama said, I have directly seen Krishna's affection for the Brahmanas because he embraced me to his chest, the residence place for Lakshmi Devi. Next text. Who am I? A sinful poor friend of a Brahman. And who is Krishna? The supreme personality of Godhead, full of 6 opulences. Nevertheless, he has embraced me with his 2 arms. Commentary. Sudama said, though I am so fallen, I am not even fit to be called a Brahmana. I was embraced by Krishna's arms. Next text. He treated me just like one of his brothers, making me sit on the bed of his beloved consort. And because I was fatigued, his queen personally fanned me with a yak tail chamara. Next text. Although he is the lord of all the demigods and the object of worship for all the Brahmanas, he worshipped me as if I were a demigod myself, massaging my feet and rendering humble services. Next text. Devotional service to his lotus feet is the root cause of all the perfections a person can find in heaven, in liberation, in the subterranean regions, and on earth. Next text. Thinking, if this poor wretch suddenly becomes rich, he will forget me in his intoxicating happiness. The compassionate Lord did not grant me even a little wealth. Commentary. Sudama's statement that Krishna gave him not even a little wealth may also be taken to mean that Krishna did not give me anything is my great wealth. That Krishna did not give me anything, that is my great wealth. Or it can mean that instead of Sudama's wealth that was Aburi's slight, Krishna in fact gave him immense treasure of his association. Next text. Thus thinking to himself, Sudama finally came to the place where his home stood, but that place was now crowded on all sides with towering celestial palaces rivaling the combined brilliance of the sun, fire, and moon. There were splendorous courtyards and gardens, each filled with flocks of cooing birds and beautified ponds, in which Kumuda, Ambosia, Kalara, and Utpala lotuses grew. Finely attired men and doe-eyed women stood in attendance. Sudama wondered, what is all this? Whose property is this? How has this come about? Commentary. As Sudama approached his own house, he saw the effulgence of the place and thought, what is this? Seeing the palatial towers, he said, whose place is this? Finally recognizing it as his own house, he wondered, how did this happen? Next text. As he continued to ponder in this way, the beautiful men and maidservants, as effulgent as demigods, came forward to greet their greatly fortunate master with loud song and instrumental music. Commentary. The word prachagrinpan, the servants acknowledging in turn, indicates that first Sudama accepted the servants within his mind, deciding the Lord must want me to have them. Noticing the changes in Sudama's attitude, the servants then approached him as their master. Next text. When she heard that her husband had arrived, the Brahmin's wife quickly came out of the house in a jubilant flurry. She resembled the goddess of fortune herself, emerging from her divine abode. Commentary. The night before, Sudama's wife went to sleep with a wasted body. Wasted means the body has no fat or anything like that, very thin. Withered breasts and worn out clothes in a house with broken walls and a crumbling roof. When she woke up in the morning, however, she found herself in her house wonderfully changed. And not only was the house changed, she actually looked better. You understand? Before she was just like that, and then she was completely beautiful. She was astonished for a moment and then concluded that all this wealth had been given to Sudama by Lord Krishna. Then she went out to greet her husband. Next text. When the chaste lady saw her husband, her eyes filled with tears of love and eagerness. As she held her eyes closed, she solemnly bowed to him, and in her heart she embraced him. Next text. Sudama was amazed to see his wife, shining forth in the midst of many maidservants adorned with jeweled lockets. She looked as effulgent as a demigoddess in her celestial airplane. Commentary. Sudama still had his old worn cloth and protruding veins. Krishna kept him in his wretched state so that his wife would recognize him. Otherwise, his wife wouldn't recognize him. If he came back, dressed like a prince. Next text. With pleasure, he took his wife with him and entered the house where there were hundreds of gem-studded pillars, just as in the palace of Lord Mahendra.
Sudama looked the same.
He looked the same, yeah. At this point. I mean, obviously, after he started eating nicely, he filled out and he went dressed nicely. This is very nice. Commentary. Sudama was simply astonished at the sight of his wife. This is nice. And as he wondered, who is this demigod's wife approaching such a fallen soul as me? In other words, he didn't recognize her. The maidservants informed him, this is indeed your wife. Immediately, Sudama's Brahman became young and beautiful. Sudama's body became young and beautiful, bedecked in fine clothing and jewelry. In other words, he kept his wretched appearance until he met his wife, and then, boop, immediately he became younger and more attractive. The word pritahai here indicates that these changes gave Sudama considerable pleasure. Sudama and his wife then entered the house which rivaled Indra's celestial abode in opulence. The Vishnu Sahasranam, Thousand Names of Vishnu, contained in the Mahabharata, describes Krishna as the one who brought the treasure of Indra to earth for his devotee beggar Sridham. Wow, this is in the Vishnu Sahasranam. I didn't know that. And here's the verse from the Vishnu Sahasranam. Sridhama Ranka Bhaktarta Bhum Yatinendra Vaibhavaha. Yeah, Sridhama Ranka Bhaktitartha Padi. The bhakti of Sudama, he got the riches of Indra. The riches of Indra literally manifested themselves. It's interesting. Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur really gives you a lot of additional information. So next text. In Sudama's home were beds as soft and white as the foam of milk, with bedsteads made of ivory and ornamented with gold. There were also couches with golden legs, as well as royal chamara fans, golden thrones, soft cushions, and gleaming canopies hung with strings of pearls. Upon the walls of sparkling crystal glass inlaid with precious emeralds shone jeweled lamps, and the women in the palace were all adorned with precious gems. As he viewed this luxurious opulence of all varieties, the Brahmana calmly reasoned to himself about his unexpected prosperity. Commentary. Sudama reflected upon the sudden increase in his fortune. Next text. Sudama thought, I've always been poor. Certainly the only possible way that such an unfortunate person as myself could suddenly become rich is that Lord Krishna, the supremely opulent chief of the Yadu dynasty, has glanced upon me. Commentary. Sudama thought, the great opulence of me in this house has happened only affected by the glance of Sri Krishna. Next text. After all, my friend Krishna, the most exalted of the Dasharas and the enjoyer of unlimited wealth, noticed that I secretly intended to beg from him. Thus, even though he said nothing about it when I stood before him, he actually bestowed upon me the most abundant riches. In this way, he acted just like a merciful rain cloud. Commentary. Sudama thought, if Krishna has bestowed this wealth upon me, then why did he not tell me about it when we met in Dwarka? Certainly my friend directly speaks and gives abundant wealth to beggars like myself. I surmise that Krishna did not mention how he was going to fulfill my unspoken request because at that time he was thinking, my dear friend has given me these grains of rice which are greater than all the treasures I own. Even though in his own house he had no such gift to give me, he took the trouble of begging it from a neighbor. Therefore, it is only proper that I give him something more valuable than all my possessions. But nothing is equal to or greater than what I possess. So all that I can do is give him such meager things as the treasures of Indra, Brahma, and the other demigods. Embarrassed at being unable to properly reciprocate Sudama's offering, Krishna bestowed his favor on him silently. Krishna acted just like a magnanimous rain cloud, which provides the necessities of life for everyone near and far, but feels ashamed that its rain is too insufficient, a gift given in return for the abundant offerings that the farmers make to it. Out of shame, the cloud may wait until nighttime when the farmers are asleep before watering their fields. This is the position of Krishna, the best of the generous dynasty of Yadus. So next text. The Lord considers even his greatest benedictions to be insignificant, while he magnifies even a small service rendered to him by his well-wishing devotee. Therefore, with great pleasure, the Supreme Soul accepted a single palmful of the flat rice I brought him. Commentary. Sudama thought, Krishna thought that what he was giving to me, though great, was small, and that what I was giving, though insignificant, was great. For that reason, he accepted the rice offered by me with devotion. Next text. The Lord is the supremely compassionate reservoir of all transcendental qualities. Life after life, may I serve him with love, friendship, and sympathy, and may I cultivate such firm attachment for him by the precious association of his devotees. So commentary. Sudama thought, may I have affection toward Krishna who is so compassionate to his devotees. The word Sakya means affinity manifested in the desire to live in Krishna's association. Maitri means the attitude of intimate comradeship, and dasham means the urge to do service. So next text. To a devotee who lacks spiritual insight, the Supreme Lord will not grant the wonderful opulences of this worldly kingly power and material assets. Indeed, in his infinite wisdom, the unborn Lord knows well how the intoxication of pride can cause the downfall of the wealthy. So commentary. Someone might ask, so you have devotion, and the result of that devotion is gaining wealth? In this verse, Sudama replies by saying, no, I do not have bhakti, and attaining material wealth is not the result of bhakti. Sudama thought, a great saint like Prahlad Maharaj can avoid becoming contaminated by immeasurable wealth, power, and fame. But I must always be wary of temptation in my new situation. After obtaining wealth, Sudama thought, what is the use of it? Although surrounded by material opulence, Sudama only enjoyed what was necessary to maintain himself. Fixed in his vows, Sudama continued sleeping on the earth. Wow. See, I learned something new by reading this purport. He became completely absorbed in hearing and chanting about Krishna and rendering other forms of devotional service. Krishna does not give as much material wealth as a neophyte devotee may desire, but only what will promote his spiritual advancement. However, some say that Krishna will give unlimited wealth to assist the devotional service of his premi bhaktis, loving devotees. Next text. Shukadeva Goswami continued, thus firmly fixed in his determination by means of his spiritual intelligence, Sudama remained absolutely devoted to Lord Krishna, the shelter of all living beings. Free from avarice, he enjoyed, together with his wife, the sense pleasures that had been bestowed upon him, always with the idea of eventually renouncing all sense gratification. Next text. Lord Hari is the God of all gods, the master of all sacrifices, and the supreme ruler. But he accepts the saintly brahmanas as his masters, and so there exists no deity higher than them. Commentary. Though Krishna is affectionate to his devotees, he is famous for being affectionate to the brahmanas. Krishna is the supreme master of everyone, yet he accepts the brahmanas as his masters. Even though Krishna is the god of all gods, the brahmanas are his deities. Krishna is the master of all sacrifices, but he happily worships the brahmanas. Next text. Thus seeing how the unconquerable supreme lord is nonetheless conquered by his own servants, the Lord's dear Brahmin friend felt the remaining knots of material attachment within his heart becoming cut by the force of his constant meditation on the Lord. In a short time, he attained Lord Krishna's supreme abode, the destination of great saints. Commentary. This verse shows how Sudama got free from material attachment and attained the wealth of Krishna's abode. Seeing that the unconquerable Lord is conquered by his servants, Sudama returned to his previous nature and meditated on Krishna. Final text. The Lord always shows brahmanas special favor. Anyone who hears this account of the Supreme Lord's kindness to brahmanas will come to develop love for the Lord and thus become freed from the bondage of material work. Thus ends the commentary on the 81st chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam for the pleasure of the devotees in accordance with the previous acharyas. Nice story, isn't it? Krishna Chakravarti Thakur is amazing. So, any questions?
Yeah, like here is Sudama, Brahman say, you know, we should not give material for this to the new five devotees.
That's right.
But new five devotees are most desirable.
That's why they don't get it. Because it would actually deviate them because they desire it the most. I mean, advanced devotees only desire opulence to serve the Lord. But neophyte devotees desire opulence. I mean, they actually want to do business with the Lord. Like they go to see Balaji or some other deities and they make a business deal. Isn't it? Or they have this Sachin Narayan Katha. You know what Sachin Narayan Katha is? That's one of the most popular ceremonies, because those of you from Europe don't know what it is. It's where the Hindus, they chant Om Jaya Jagadisha Hari Swami. And they tell stories about how different devotees, including the Sudama Brahman story, how different devotees attained opulence and they get encouraged by it. And they talk about, they even share with each other what they acquired the last week.
Okay.
That's Sachin Narayan Katha. I mean, it's just like, it's mixed karma mishra bhakti. So, yeah, so for those who Krishna especially favors, I mean, sincere devotees, Krishna does take things away from them. And so, the question is that famous verse, Yasyaham Anagrunami Harishe Tadadamshanai. For those who I especially favor, I take away everything, and actually even their relatives, and everybody just rejects them, and then they take shelter of the holy names. That's Krishna's special mercy. Of course, Krishna doesn't give that special mercy unless you're ready to accept it and remain his devotee. Because if you just really fall, and if Krishna does that to you, you just reject Krishna and become an atheist. Yeah, so Krishna only gives things to his actual devotees when they can use it in his service and they don't become proud of it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would take them away from him. I mean, if Krishna would give someone material opulence and they're not ready for it, they would just become proud. I mean, look at Kuvera and Manigriva. You know, Kuvera-san, Manigriva, Nala Kuvera. Right? They became so proud of their opulence that when Narada Muni appeared, they didn't put their clothes on. Isn't that, I mean, that's pretty heavy, isn't it? I mean, Narada Muni came and you're just naked. Even the girls had more intelligence than that. Intelligence than that. The Heavenly Society girls that were with them. Okay, any other questions?
Is this a book that you're reading from?
Yeah. It's a book that was published by Manu Maharaj. And it's available. I think the book's probably pretty expensive. It's a big book. But, you know, I get all these things in e-format. I can't deal with books anymore because I'm traveling.
Yeah. How do you get it on
e-format? Well, I got it from him directly. I can't really give it out to other people.
Right. So
but you can write to him. It may be available in the database. Let me check. Let me look at the database. It actually may be in the database. And then do you have the database? Because the database has many of these different... Let me just look in the database right now. And this is nice too, because you can run the database from this thing. And you can't do it from an Apple.
Oh, wow.
I mean, from an iPad. So, let's see.
You pay to have internet on it?
Pay to have internet? No, this doesn't have internet. I mean, it has a Wi-Fi. If there's Wi-Fi. This doesn't have 3G. No, this is... If there's 3G, if there's Wi-Fi available, I can go on the internet with this. But you can get some with a little, you know, SIM card. So you can do it. Okay. Let me just look and see what I have here. Let me just... let's see. Writings of past acharyas. Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I don't think it has it.
This 2011.
Yeah.
Okay, also.
Yeah, it doesn't have it. Other scriptural writings, let's see, maybe it's in there. Indra Chaitanya Bhagavat, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Gita Mahatma. I don't see it. Anyway, I'm sure if someone were to write to Banamara, she'd probably let you have it. But anyway, or it might be available somewhere else. But usually I get this stuff directly from Banamara, and I have to guarantee that I'm not going to give copies to people.
Right.
Because, you know, he makes money from selling. He doesn't make money, but he pays for his expenses. By selling his books, you know, the printing costs. It's nice. I have a library of thousands and thousands of books here.
Wow.
By the past acharyas. All the past acharyas. Practically every book that's ever been typed up or published. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, and Goswamis of Vrindavan. Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, another in Sudama, Brahmani is, you know, Krishna role is not affluent, and he is very, he is not surviving his family.
Yeah.
So was it not he had before?
Well, that was explained by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, that actually Sudama Brahmani was averse to wealth before. Remember, I just read that? He said there's two types of Nishkam devotees. Remember?
Yeah.
I was reading the purport. There's two types of Nishkam devotees. One who is averse to material opulence, and one is just detached, neutral. So Sudama Brahmana was the type that was averse. Averse means against, negative towards material opulence. So he actually, his desire was not to have material opulence. So the Lord was reciprocating with his desire. That's according to Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in the purport we just read. So he was thinking, I don't want it. And you see, even after he got it, he slept on the floor.
Yes.
And that's interesting too. You know, you're given all these beds, you know, with ivory and gold pillars and everything, and you sleep on the floor. Who could do such a thing? Would you do it? No. he would sleep in, he would jump in the bed. Oh, it's nectar. Isn't it? I mean, even here, I mean, just myself, On my bed, I had brought some space age foam to put on top of it. You know what space age foam is?
No, you.
Memory foam, yeah. You know, even, you know, here I am a sannyasi, and I put the soft, what is it? Kashipu. Kashipu means like soft bed. But anyway, like a Rani Kashipu. So, the Sudama Brahmani slept on the floor. It's interesting, isn't it? Because he was averse to material objects. But, you know, later on he accepted because he understood it was the Lord's desire. It's interesting. He went home and he didn't recognize his wife. He said, "Who are you? You come from heaven?" He said, "No, I'm your wife." And she looked, you know, younger, more beautiful. You know, before she was just like skin and bones, like a skeleton, walking skeleton. You can imagine. I mean, you've seen people like very thin like that.
It's kind of disturbing to be that thin.
What's that?
That's a little bit disturbing to be so.
Yeah, I mean, it's like distended bellies, you know, because they have malnutrition. You've seen that? Like children sometimes with the belly out like that because they have malnutrition. The hair is all blonde in India.
The belly goes out.
Yeah.
Why?
Technically, I don't know. Medically, why do you know why it goes out when they have malnutrition?
I don't know exactly. I don't know. Maybe it's something to
get or something. Something. There's some reason. It's actually a sign of malnutrition, where they're very thin all over and the belly's out and they're just like walking skeletons. I mean, you see kids sometimes like that their arms are like this thin. Around. You've seen that in India, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, around here, everyone looks pretty good in Govardhan. I mean, I haven't really seen... In Govardhan, I haven't seen any walking skeletons.
This is much in the people with the tribalist area, like Jharkhand, Chhattisgarh, and those people have could not be able to access the medical facilities.
Yeah. Madhya Pradesh.
No, Madhya Pradesh, Chhattisgarh, and Jharkhand.
Jharkhand, yeah. Yeah, here the people look pretty healthy, the people I've seen on the street.
Yes.
I mean, once in a while you run into someone that doesn't look so good, but even the widows, you know, who are begging, they don't look like they're emaciated. They look, they look normal.
Yes. A lot of temples, they're serving prasad.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of free prasad. I mean, you saw it like they were offering to Giriraj as mountains of sweets the other day. At the, when we were doing the parikrama. So, but you can imagine, you know, how sickly she looked. And then all of a sudden she looked very beautiful. What's that?
What about Kumar?
What about him?
He was also asleep on the floor when he was in the book.
Yeah, because he wanted to maintain his position as being
also
a coward.
Or,
what?
No.
Gopakumar's situation was different. It's not that he was averse to material opulence, but he just like is attached to being a coward boy. He didn't even really think about material opulence or that. He liked being a coward boy. They wanted to transform his body into the body of a demigod, the body of a Brahmin. In different places he went, he just thought, you know, I'm attached to being who I am. He didn't want to be anything else. And a coward boy sleeps on the floor, you know, or in the dirt. And, you know, they kept saying to him, "You look wretched." Actually, even when he went back to the spiritual world by Kuntaloka, the forearm associates of Lord Vishnu said, "You know, you look wretched. You know, you should become one of us." And he said, "No, thanks."
I thought the coward boys were kind of opulent.
They were, but they still slept on the floor. I mean, not all of them, but they were just like simple. They took care of the cows, went to the pasture. Krishna didn't even wear shoes when he went out to take care of the cows. Even Mother Yashoda said, "You should wear shoes." And Krishna said, "No, the cows don't have shoes, so why should I wear shoes? You understand? Why should I be better than the cows?" That was interesting. Because, you know, Krishna was very simple. He didn't wear shoes. Until he went to Mathura, then he wore shoes.
Even in the village, people don't use slippers.
What's that?
In villages,
the people don't use slippers or anything. It's just a very simple life, you know, and they like it.
Yeah.
And they like it, you know. Somehow or other, you know, people, even if they can afford it. I mean, in New Zealand, I was preaching. Anyway, there was one girl there who was very attached to a simple life, and she came to join us on a preaching program, meet our car somewhere, and she was walking through the middle of the street without shoes, barefoot. And I said, I told her, this is crazy. He said, no, I like it. I said, we have to stop at a shoe store. This is in New Zealand. We had to stop in a shoe store. I mean, she's from a village or something. We had to stop in a shoe store. He said, I'm buying you shoes. You know, you go to a program with us. You know, looking like this. You know, walking, taking trains in the city, walking through the middle of the city without shoes on. You know, barefoot, no socks, just barefoot.
We went once on a plane barefoot.
I went?
So funny. We went on
a plane. Oh, you went on a plane barefoot?
It was so funny in India, you know, these business guys.
No, but people criticize us if we do that.
There's this area, I think maybe Kenya or somewhere in Africa, where they barefoot and they're like the fastest runners in the world.
Really?
And they go barefoot.
And they're the ones who join the Boston Marathon sometimes?
I think so.
That's Maasai, right?
I forgot, they wrote a book about
that. I think it was
not. I don't know.
Try.
They actually do advertise with other shoes.